Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session for some to adjourn.
Good morning, be seated, please. Small file. First case in our calendar is number 8-2433, Ohio Council 8 versus the State Employment Relations Board. Mr. Grayson.
Chief Justice, fellow justices, may it please the court. Sean Grayson on behalf of the Allen Ohio Council of ASCII. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. ASCII is the Dean Certified Bargaining Representative of a unit of employees at Edwin Shaw Hospital. The Dean Certified Unit has historically included the classification of nursing assistants. Beginning in 1987, as nursing assistants left hospital employment, they were replaced by employees in Edwin Shaw Hospital titled triage technicians. Eventually, when the union learned that the hospital no longer considered these new hires to be nursing assistants, but rather triage technicians, and that they removed the duties of the triage technicians from the bargaining unit, the union filed grievance. The grievance alleged that the hospital was in violation of the recognition clause in the party's collective bargaining agreement, which provided that all newly created jobs performing job duties similar to bargaining unit work would become part of the bargaining unit.
Counselor, we've read the briefs. We understand the facts and understand certified bargaining units and the fact that it went to arbitration. Why didn't you argue that since this went to arbitration, arbitration being final, why didn't you argue the sanctity of the arbitration agreement as opposed to going into the fair share fee and all of that? I mean, the fact is, an arbitrator ruled that these were to be included in the bargaining unit.
Sure.
How is that even appealable?
Well, actually, the arbitration decision itself was not appealable, and that decision was not appealable by either the employer or the union. In fact, what occurred was that one of the triage technicians, whom the arbitrator placed in the collective bargaining agreement pursuant to the recognition clause of the contract, filed an unfair labor practice charge with the State Employment Relations Board, claiming that he had been improperly included in the bargaining unit. The State Employment Relations Board refused to grant recognition to the arbitration decision rendered in as a result of having filed this grievance, claiming that it had exclusive jurisdiction to determine whether the triage technician job duties were included or excluded from.
So in effect, what they were ruling was that your arbitration agreement, your collective bargaining agreement, notwithstanding 4117.10a of the Act, your arbitration agreement, as pertains to this issue, was just null and void.
They don't come out and say that in their opinion.
Well, when they took jurisdiction, they did.
But they certainly indicate that that decision has no influence or impact upon the State Employment Relations Board whatsoever.
Isn't one of the problems here that the persons who are affected by the decision of the arbitrator never had any opportunity to be heard by the arbitrator? We support arbitration, obviously. This court has supported arbitration, the statute does, but we also support giving people a hearing, a chance to be heard before a decision is made that affects them. That's pretty basic to our jurisprudence.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Well, there's nothing in our case law that prevents that conclusion here, is there?
Well, there's not, except that the argument is served that employees, Mr. Bain in this case, would have had any more due process rights before served than he had at arbitration is simply a red herring.
Yes.
Serve's own precedent, its policies, its rules, its procedures, and its regulations would have given Mr. Bain no more due process rights in front of CERB than it does at arbitration. In fact, CERB has ruled in the Henri Martin decision, which is set forth in the appellant's merit and reply brief, that none of its rules regarding the filing of petitions to amend or clarify bargaining units give employees standing at all to either file such petitions, to become parties to such petitions, or to intervene in such petitions. Once the unit, decision goes on to say that once the unit has been deemed appropriate, an exclusive bargaining agent becomes the sole voice of employees regarding unit structure, and that the personal choice of public employees with respect to human alteration just is irrelevant. In fact, when petitions to amend or clarify a bargaining unit are final, there is no notice posted in the with the employer in the job site. The individual employees who are affected get no notice that a petition has been filed. They are not asked to participate in funds service. If the petition is a joint petition, the employees' views are never heard. If the petition is a unilateral petition, the employees are invited to participate at CERB just as they are at arbitration, and that is to become a witness for either one of the two of the parties. If in a petition of clarification, an employee becomes a witness, the employee isn't even asked what their preference is regarding inclusion or exclusion from the bargaining unit, because OAC 4117501E specifically provides that the only issues in dispute are whether the job duties in question perform job duties that the bargaining unit has historically represented, and if that's true, the classification merely gets moved into the bargaining unit. So even if an employee expressed a preference as to whether they want to be included or excluded from the bargaining unit via a petition to clarify or amend the bargaining unit, that preference is totally irrelevant.
I guess a problem I'm having is seeing an arbitrator being able to decide that a whole classification of employees becomes a part of a bargaining unit. That seems to me to be one of the purposes for which CERB was created, to make that kind of decision. But you argue that that's not the situation. Is this case different because there were formerly nurses and now we have triage assistants who are technicians who are really nurses? Is that in line?
Yeah, I understand your question, Chief Justice. In fact, the arbitrator did exactly what CERB claims it would have done with respect to this particular clarification. It compared the job duties of the triage technician with the job duties that are already in the bargaining unit, specifically nursing assistant. And the arbitrator found, and I quote, "For the vast majority of each work shift, the triage technician performs the duties historically performed in West One by nursing assistant. Factually, nursing assistant has simply been replaced by triage technician." Certainly, the evidence in front of the arbitrator was simply, what does a triage technician do? What does a nursing assistant historically do? And an arbitrator certainly has the capability of determining if those two things match up. And if they do, then the job duties historically performed by nursing assistants should not have been excluded from the bargaining unit by Edwin Shaw, and that is what this arbitrator found.
Putting aside the arbitration argument for a moment, you've quoted to us and read to us the second paragraph of the syllabus of Martin, the CERB case. But there's a third paragraph of that syllabus, too. And it says that an employee who believes the union is not fairly representing the interests of all employees may resort to an unfair labor practice charge.
Certainly.
How do you respond to that?
It is our contention, Justice Douglas, that in fact, whether or not CERB makes a determination in a unit clarification petition or a unit for amendment of certification, or an arbitrator renders a decision that would be consistent with those two avenues, that the employee still has a due process right and remedy, and that is to file an unfair labor practice charge. That is precisely the remedy that Mr. Bain sought here, and that remedy worked. Mr. Bain was found to have been justified in filing his unfair labor practice charge for CERB found that the union committed an unfair labor practice. That avenue is not lost to an employee, whether the employee utilizes CERB or utilizes arbitration. The question before this court, then, is whether or not an arbitrator has jurisdiction to determine unit clarification petitions. In fact, this court has recognized under Section 4A that Section 4A was designed to maintain the status quo, and it was public sector and employee-employer collective bargaining relationships that predated April 1st of 1984. These relationships are defined by contract. Collective bargaining agreement between the parties defines the bargaining unit, defines the rights of the parties, and sets forth mutual methods of dispute resolution. CERB acknowledges this fact in page 6 of its opinion. These being certified units were not created by the statutory scheme set out in 4117, but in fact were created by contract. No CERB action is necessary to create these deemed certified units. No certification needed to be issued by CERB to create these deemed certified units. These units are simply a product of contract. It makes no sense to say that the parties to a contract cannot bargain across the bargaining table to define and maintain a contractual relationship. And it makes no sense to say that those parties can't go to arbitration when the law of Ohio favors arbitration to resolve contractual disputes and labor relations. Certainly nothing in Chapter 2711 will prohibit an arbitrator from deciding or resolving contractual disputes arising out of the recognition clause of the party's collective bargaining agreement. CERB claims that an arbitrator may not make unit clarification determinations in deemed certified units because CERB has alone exclusive jurisdiction to make those determinations. This poses two questions before this court. First, does CERB have jurisdiction to entertain certification or petitions to clarify deemed certified units? And secondly, is its jurisdiction exclusive? ASTRI asserts that in 1995, CERB had no jurisdiction and continues to have no jurisdiction to clarify deemed certified units. For this court in Cincinnati, invalidated 4117501F in its entirety. The syllabus in Cincinnati couldn't be more clear. That syllabus specifically indicates that all of 4117501F, the only rule that talks about allowing CERB to amend or clarify deemed certified units, are invalidated in its entirety. Therefore, it's ASCII's position that CERB has no jurisdiction to entertain those petitions. CERB reads Cincinnati to preclude it only from entertaining petitions which alter or amend deemed certified units. And they assert that petitions for clarification do not alter or amend deemed certified units. In fact, in its opinion, CERB states, the purpose of a clarification petition is to determine whether a particular employee or group of employees is included or excluded from the bargaining unit upon the existing unit description. Therefore, according to CERB, when it deals with a petition for clarification, the legislature has already deemed the unit as composed to be an appropriate unit. It does not redefine the bargaining unit, simply determines whether or not a given new classification performs work which is already encompassed within the bargaining unit. So it goes on to say, clarification carries out the court's intent in the Cincinnati case because it allows the parties to maintain the status quo. Actually would agree that if CERB would do what the rule says it's supposed to do, that in fact, petitions for clarification ought to maintain the status quo. But CERB doesn't do what it says. And this court saw that and recognized that in Cincinnati. For in Cincinnati, the issue involved five petitions for unit clarification. Four of the petitions, the employer sought to exclude supervisors from the bargaining unit. Supervisors had historically been included in the deemed certified unit. In the fifth petition, the employer sought to exclude guards from the unit. Guards had also been historically included in the bargaining unit. In reviewing those five petitions for unit clarification, CERB didn't look to the job duties of supervisors and guards and compare those to the job duties that historically had been included in the bargaining unit to maintain the status quo. Instead, they looked at the definition of 4117.01, the definition of supervisor under the Act, and the definition of guard under the Act under 4117.062, and removed the guards from the bargaining unit. Therefore, this court can see that when a union attempts to file a petition for clarification, CERB uses those petitions as a task to remove classifications from the bargaining unit, not to maintain the status quo. It is for this very reason that this court invalidated 4117.501F in its entirety, not just that section of 4117.05.01F that would have invalidated the filing of petitions for amendment certification. I see that my time is up. I'd like to reserve my final 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Gray.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Pete Thomas from Ohio Attorney General Bay Montgomery's office here today on behalf of the State Farm Relations Board. The question before the court this morning is one of fairness, due process, and consistency of interpretation of Chapter 4117, and whether all public employees have the same rights under that statute, or whether the General Assembly intended to create a dichotomous system whereby some employees have some rights and other employees have other rights. I'd like to first take disagree with my colleague's interpretation of the process under Chapter 417. In a petition before CERB rules do provide for interested parties to intervene in any proceeding. Ohio Administrative Code Section 4117-1-07 is the vehicle for such a motion to intervene. Second, any joint petition that comes to CERB or any petition that comes to CERB is to be investigated. Ohio Administrative Code Rule 4117-504 requires that CERB shall investigate these petitions.
But this wasn't an intervention.
This was an unfair labor practice proceeding, Your Honor.
That's not an intervening in an existing case.
No.
Is it? That's starting a new case.
That is if they would have prevented the matter to CERB as CERB mandates their jurisdiction requires. The modification of the bargain is to be brought to CERB. That vehicle presents ways for the individual to become involved and have the due process rights protected, whereas the arbitration proceeding in this matter clearly did not.
Now, I understand that issue, but you're quoting to us the rule that says that any interested party can intervene.
That's correct.
How is this an intervention like we would no intervention under Rule 23? This isn't an intervention. He started a whole new case.
I'm addressing your concern, Your Honor, that you had, Mr. Judge Justice Moyer, had regard to due process concerns of the arbitration, which does not allow for any participation other than the employer and the employee organization, if these parties are not permitted to intervene in arbitration.
We've got that in the Martin case, which says that he can file an unfair labor practice. But the issue is, the unfair labor practice that's covered in Martin is whether or not the deemed certified unit or the unit is properly representing those employees, not whether or not they're included in the bargaining unit.
The concern of the Martin case, Your Honor, is that in that case, that employee clearly was within the bargaining unit, and in this case, there's a question of whether he is in the bargaining unit. And it's CERB's position that CERB is the vehicle, and it's the General Assembly's intent that there be one body that addresses public sector labor relations in the state of Ohio, and that is the State Employment Relations Board. That gives uniformity of decision, consistency of decision, and clarity of decision. An arbitrator's decision is not binding or precedential. It is very fact-based and specific. And in fact, CERB, if these vehicles are brought to CERB, assists in harmonious labor relations because by setting out criteria for how units are composed or what interpretations are going to be made by CERB, parties can see across the table no matter what CERB has done in past cases, and they can agree, look, we're going to agree with you on this. CERB has in the past agreed to this position and this similar position is involved. We'll disagree with you. We'll take the joint petition to CERB and we'll let them rule on it. That promotes harmonious labor relations.
Are you indicating that CERB could exercise jurisdiction over any and all arbitration decisions with which they didn't agree?
No, Your Honor.
Well, it sounds to me like you're saying that we have one body of law, and I agree with that, and that's why CERB was formed, to rule on all matters involving labor relations between employees and employers.
That's correct.
Certainly arbitration hearings and decisions are part of that body of law. Why wouldn't they then, ergo, be able to assert jurisdiction over every arbitration decision that they didn't like, if we follow your argument in this case?
The argument in this case, Your Honor, is that CERB has jurisdiction over the matters committed to it pursuant to Chapter 417, and that includes unit composition. That includes unfair labor practices, that includes strikes, various other issues. In those areas, there needs to be one uniform voice in the state of Ohio. With matters of solely grievances and contract interpretation, CERB does not need to speak in those matters. The bargaining unit composition is something that can adversely affect not only that bargaining unit, similar bargaining units in the state of Ohio. CERB has a mandate under the statute that they are to perform a clearinghouse function of maintaining accurate statistics of bargaining unit composition, wages, and that information. If bargaining units are being changed without CERB being involved or being notified, that function, which is mandated by 417.02, cannot be performed accurately by CERB. So there are other matters where this is in great public interest. It includes the uniformity of decision, any consistency factor.
So every time that an employer adds another position, that maybe this one is somewhat questionable. I mean, maybe it can be questioned. But let's take one where you add 10 more guards to an existing position, to the 10 more positions of guards to the existing bargaining unit, and you put them in the bargaining unit. Can somebody question that and say, we don't want to go into the bargaining unit because it's the composition of a bargaining unit? Can they file unfair labor practice?
Sure. That's what happened here.
Even though it falls within the jurisdiction of the bargaining unit. I've never heard of that.
Any bargaining unit, is a change if you're adding more guards?
Uh-huh.
No, but this is a new position. These are different positions, and there's a question of whether they were in the bargaining unit in 1984 when they were being certified or not. Now, the intent of the General Assembly in passing the unprovided law, Section 4A, was to simply get the bargaining units past the certification process. They did not want to create a landslide on CERB as all, because there were many existing bargaining units. They did not want to require a filing with CERB to certify these units. They said, we will leave them certified. They also did not want, these were settled units, they did not want to create chaos and upheaval by reaching into the bargaining units through the CERB certification process and taking away what the people were being paid. And that is true again today. CERB looks at what the bargaining unit composition was at 1984 and determines whether the positions existed in a petition for verification or a petition for amendment. You're changing the unit. That's literally what it says in the rule, and that's literally what the case law is.
Theoretically, if the triage technicians were not really nurses, let's assume that they do something different than nurses, that they could form a entirely separate bargaining unit, couldn't they?
That's correct.
That's your point, is that I think is your point, is that the statute contemplates that if there's a change in the, not an adding of a prison guard to a prison guard bargaining unit, but an adding a different type of employee, a different function to a bargaining unit, that's an issue for CERB to decide and not for an arbitrator to decide.
That's right. The parties did not privately agree to any more to amend the petition than an arbitrator. The parties can sit down and decide prior to the act they did, and they could. But since the act is passed, the parties cannot sit down and say, we're going to have a bargaining unit that's going to include all these people, and we're not going to go to CERB. But then we're going to go to CERB when we have unfair labor practices, and we're going to go to CERB when we need elections, and we're going to go to CERB for other matters. If the act applies, the act applies to everyone, and to all, for all purposes, not being certified against a separate system. That was not the intent of the legislature, and it doesn't support the uniformity of labor relations in the state of Ohio. What the appellant is urging, essentially, is that the uncodified law create all the rights that are needed by the decertified units, and that everything they get is according to the contract. But that turns Chapter 4117 on its head. 4117 is the vehicle to provide all the rights and duties and responsibilities for the parties. And the uncodified law simply grandfathered in those units as they existed with enough people and overburdened serve as a benefit. So there's the harm if arbitrators are allowed to decide these issues are lack of uniformity, lack of precedential value, risk of inconsistent decisions within the same bargaining. If you have the arbitrators not bound by a previous arbitrator's decision, and the single arbitrator is not bound by his previous decision. Further, if you say that there's concurrent jurisdiction, that a party can come either to serve or to an arbitrator, that raises another set of issues. There are race judicata concerns, there's races to which form you file in. If you file in one, can you abandon your right to file in the other? Do you wait until the term of the contract expires when you bargain a new contract and then go back and file the same thing? That scenario would promote chaos that existed prior to the passage of Chapter 4117. And to ensure stable labor relations, State Farm Relations Board needs to put their premature on bargaining units in the state of Ohio.
Council, on the uniformity issue, change, you would say the principal bargaining unit at a hospital was a different labor union than the actual
Cincinnati?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Cincinnati has been limited and applied in Brecksville very harmoniously with this situation.
Well, we made an exception in Brecksville for that, for an employer and employee organization petitioning jointly. But doesn't Cincinnati specifically say that it's within the jurisdiction, it's not within the jurisdiction of CERB to, I don't have it in front of me, but it seems to me that it was pretty clear that Cincinnati held that CERB didn't have jurisdiction in this area whenever we did 4A. Didn't we just say that in Cincinnati?
In Cincinnati, the issue was unilateral employer petition, which is for construed as an attack on bargaining and a change to the status quo, and that CERB did not have jurisdiction because of the attacking of the employer to change the status quo. In Brecksville, it was determined that it is within CERB's jurisdiction, and a matter of fact, for joint petitions. As a matter of fact, that the reading is that absent CERB hearing these petitions and absent an attack by rival organizations compensation. The units are frozen in time. Now, frozen in time does not mean they can be changed by arbitrator. So the intent of this court and what you said in Nebraska was that CERT reaches these decisions. Arrival organization challenges, or the unit is frozen in time. Frozen time does not include the interpretation of the arbitrator. So do not believe you need scope clauses.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Grayson, you saved a minute and a half of your time.
Do you think we have to overrule Cincinnati?
Yes, absolutely. I also disagree with Council for Sims.
Could you stay on that? Why absolutely?
Certainly. The syllabus in Cincinnati is clear and unambiguous. And that,
I know, but go to Brecksville.
Brecksville created one exception to the holding in Cincinnati. Cincinnati invalidated in its entirety, in very broad and clear language, all of 4117.501F. Brecksville syllabus simply says that it resurrects from invalidity only that portion of 4117.501F that would allow joint petitions for amendment of certification.
But the majority in Brecksville said that 4A does not expressly protect the composition of the bargaining unit.
Well, the opinion in Brecksville expresses that opinion. The majority opinion in Cincinnati expressed the opposite opinion. This court in those two cases, when you look at them, is struggling with the question of whether or not being certified status flows to unit composition or merely to representational status. And it asked me's position clearly that certification flows to unit composition. And it bases its argument on two things. One, if you look at 4117.05, which is the statutory provision that governs how an employee organization becomes certified and do certified units, it's clear that two things have to be present for certification to exist. One, the employee organization has to petition in an appropriate unit, and secondly, the employee organization either has to win a representation election or produce evidence of majority status. So, in order to be certified, both of those things have to occur. The unit has to be appropriate, and the employee organization has to have majority status.
Of course, here we're talking about a deemed. Here we're talking a different animal, the deemed certified.
Well, by using the term certified, the legislature deemed the employee organization, quote, certified. It clearly understood, because it used that language in 4117.05, that it was certifying not only representational status, but in fact, unit composition. We also believe that this legislative intent is evidenced when you compare section 4A to 4D. We've argued that argument in the Cincinnati case and again here, and I think it's clear when you compare those two provisions of the enabling legislation that in fact the legislature did not grant CERT jurisdiction to either make unit determinations in deemed certified units or to remove classifications from the bargaining unit. CERT in this case is arguing apples and oranges. You will hear the counsel for CERT get up here and say that arbitrators don't have jurisdiction to amend deemed certified units. But CERT in this case, in its unfair labor practice opinion, didn't find that AFSCME violated the law by not calling a petition to amend certification. It admitted that the petition that should have been filed in this case is a petition to clarify the bargaining unit. When you look at the 4117, its entirety said nothing about amending or clarifying the bargaining units. It only talks about making unit determinations initially when units are created. That much I agree with CERT.
Let me stop, Mr. Grayson. I want to take you back to your response to my question earlier that the right of the affected persons to have some say in this is a red herring. Do you agree that 4117.06b would apply in a CERB hearing if the matter were submitted to CERB for its determination?
CERB doesn't even admit that 4117.06b is controlling in this case, because what it claims is that the petition that should have been filed was a petition to clarify.
Well, it's rule, but it's Mr. Thomas said it to some of the rules of CERB that would give this investigative authority, and it would apparently give at least the person the chance to be heard. Do you disagree with that?
I do, for this reason. If the petition in question, as found by CERB's decision, is a petition to clarify, then the only place that you find any rules or regulations about petitions to clarify or amend being certifying units is in CERB's own rule. This is in CERB's own rule 4175.01e. When you look at that rule, CERB sets out the elements that it would investigate to determine whether or not the classification should be included in the unit. And the only thing it's going to investigate is precisely what the arbitrator investigated here. You look at the duties of the classification in question, and you look at the duties of the bargaining unit, and if the two are identical, the position goes into the bargaining unit. I disagree that the rules quoted by counsel for CERB controls in this case at all. First, as I indicated, and which counsel for CERB did not disagree with, when a petition for clarification or petition amendment is filed, the interested employees involved get no notice. So how are they going to intervene when they have no notice that such a petition has been filed?
Well, if there's an investigation done, I assume that somebody's going to ask the employees, what do you think about this?
Absolutely not.
No.
Never in my history with this agency does that occur. CERB has specifically indicated in the Tom Ray Martin decision that the only interested parties to a petition for clarification are the public employer and the employer organization, not the employee involved. For this reason,
even though they're all supposed to be looking out for the welfare of the employee doesn't get anything to say about it. That seems to me to be...
The employee under the CERB's own rule has no standing to say anything about its desires as to whether it's going to be included or excluded from the bargaining unit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.